This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. On January 1st, just a few minutes after midnight, Joe Gonzalez will be sworn in as the new Bexar County District Attorney. And there are a lot of expectations for the former assistant DA and defense attorney. He ran on a platform of keeping communities safe while also being aware of the hardships that the justice system has on the poor, addicted, and the victimized. We're joined by Joe Gonzalez this hour. He's ready to take your questions. You can call in at 210-614-8980. If you've got a question for the incoming DA, give us a call, 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. And Joe Gonzalez, welcome back to The Source.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me back.
So this is the first time we've had you since the November election, and you won with 58% of the vote against Republican Tilden Schaefer. And what do you think made the difference?
Well, I think there are a lot of things I like to think. Part of it is that we had a very aggressive campaign. We were on the ground pretty early in the season. And so there were a lot of people that were working hard. But I've got to give credit to what we are calling the Beto bump. I think the excitement about Beto O'Rourke brought a lot of voters out to the polls. And I think he helped carry us in. I'm sure a lot of the viewers are familiar with the term the blue wave. And I think we did see a lot of that. And so I think it's a combination of a lot of things. But again, I like to think that we ran a very aggressive and hard-fought race.
That blue wave is going to be felt all throughout the courthouse with 15 new judges, a new district clerk, a new county clerk, all Democrats, Republicans swept out. Of course, there have been times when Democrats have been swept out through their own red waves that have hit Texas at times. So just you live by the party designation, you're going to die by the party designation. But this will certainly make changes at the courthouse.
Yes. Well, as you mentioned, we've got brand new judges coming in both at the county court level and the district court level. Fortunately, most of those new judges have experience in the past, having been former prosecutors or former defense lawyers. So hopefully it'll be an easy transition for most of them. So obviously what we want to do is continue to keep the public safe, but we're already looking forward to working with the new slate of judges that are coming in January.
So speaking of transitions, many people want to know how the transition has been going with the district attorney's office. This is an office with a lot of moving parts, not easy to hand off from one new DA to another. How's it going with Nico LaHood? And, of course, there was some friction between the two of you when you challenged him in the primary.
Well, there hadn't been a lot of communication between Nico and I, but that's to be expected. But the good thing is there are members of his office that have been very cooperative. There have been individuals at the senior level that have certainly invited us to visit with them and help in the transition. So I've got to give my hat off to not only those people, but to Nico, because I believe it's at his direction to make the transition as smooth as possible.
What's involved in that? It's not just figuring out who's going to sit where with all the different desks and things. How many people will you be keeping from the current district attorney's office? Will there be a number of folks that you're interested in keeping? Are there some cases that you're very interested in and you're already sort of looking at paperwork? What's happening?
Well, I have been told, and I can see where this comes from, that this is the largest law firm in town. There are 500-plus employees. But I said during the campaign, and I continue to say that I had no plans on cleaning house. The large majority of people have already been told that they're staying put, that they are continuing to work for the district attorney's office. And we wanted to give that message to those employees as soon as possible, because I certainly didn't want them to go into the holiday season not knowing whether or not they had a job, not knowing whether or not they could afford to buy Christmas gifts for their loved ones. So we wanted to get that message out. There are just a handful of people that may be losing their jobs and may not be reappointed. Primarily, we're talking about those people at the senior level. Every elected DA wants to bring his own close circle, and I'm certainly one of those. But the good thing is I have been able to count on some very qualified people. The majority of my senior staff have been lawyers for 30-plus years. So it's going to be a good transition, I believe.
Let's go to the phone lines. We have a call from Ben. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got a question for Joe Gonzalez, the incoming district attorney. And it's Ben. Hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, sir.
Hello.
Hi, y'all. My question is just really regarding the recognition of the incoming DA of the disproportionate effects of the criminal justice system on the drug addicted or perhaps those that are more impoverished. I was wondering, particularly in terms of drug addiction, do you see you bringing any sort of changes in maybe just frame of mind in regards to harm reduction of communities dealing with these issues more disproportionately versus criminalization of perhaps small amounts of crack cocaine or other narcotics?
Okay, Ben, thank you for that call. So harm reduction is a term that is frequently used when talking about trying to come up with approaches that will appeal to help people who are dealing with addiction on the streets, providing them some services, and then also keeping the door open to recovery for them, and maybe not being so heavy-handed when it comes to dealing with issues that that they may have, but frequently not. But a violent crime is a violent crime.
That's correct. I made no secret of the fact that I ran on a platform of criminal justice reform, which includes restorative justice. So part of that is looking to see what the root of the problem is that causes an individual to commit a crime, especially when we're talking about drugs. Are they committing the crime of possessing drugs because they have a true addiction? And if they do, what can we do to perhaps remedy that situation so they don't become part of a revolving door situation? So we plan to have those kinds of programs in place. There already is in place some element of what is called diversionary programs. But again, we want to look to see if we can expand the diversionary programs when it comes to small amounts of drug possessions. And also that there's a component to that with regard to cite and release, where we're talking about, and I've already met with some public officials to try and avoid or better handle small amounts of possession of drugs such as marijuana.
Now, there is a community effort to try to find a legal way to have exchange of syringes, a needle exchange here in town. The previous district attorneys have not been very open to that, but is that something you're aware of?
Yes, and I've already again stated I met with a representative of the public health community, and I expressed my willingness to cooperate with them. I think the last time we had a forum, I think even the Republican candidate was in favor of that. So yes, I think if it minimizes the public health risk, that is certainly something that I'm going to be in favor of.
And so a needle exchange would be a way to, for people who are, we know that the opioid crisis is something that is real. It's happening here in Bexar County as well as across the state, across the nation. People who are dealing with other diseases, whether it be HIV or hepatitis C, if they don't have needle exchanges, clean needles, then that disease gets spread into the overall community. So there's definitely a lot of interest in the healthcare industry to find a way for needle exchange legally here locally, and this would be a first in Texas. We're going to take a break. If you've got a question for Joe Gonzalez, we want to hear from you, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio is Joe Gonzalez, the incoming district attorney, takes office on January 1st. We've been talking about transitions, a lot of cases that need to go from one office to the other, the Nicola Hood office into the Joe Gonzalez office. A lot of people are watching that. Let's go to a caller. This is Howard. Howard, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I am curious to... Are you going to follow through with the prosecution of Jeanine Jones, the Kerrville baby killer, or the death of Joshua Sawyer? That's been put on hold since you're taking office.
All right, Howard, thank you for the call. Jeanine Jones was a nurse that operated here locally at the Robert B. Greene Hospital. She is accused of killing multiple babies by giving them drugs and then pretending to resuscitate these drugs, the babies, and being hailed as a hero. Nothing. And then she was sent to allowed to go to work at the Kerrville Pediatric Hospital, and then they caught her doing that same thing, and she was put away on murder, and then she was released recently on mandatory probation. And we've heard from District Attorney Nicola Hood about how he was going to retry her on these local cases, and this has been a very complex case. And so, Joe Gonzalez, as you become the new District Attorney, where are you on the Jeanine Jones case?
What I can tell you is that we're already talking about assigning those cases to someone who has experience with these types of cases, and we're going to review them, and if the appropriate thing to do is to prosecute Ms. Jones, then we will certainly do that. What I don't want is I don't want to cause a delay because of the transition from one elected DA to the other. I want to bring closure to the family of these young victims. I want to make sure that they know that we're going to do everything we can to give them their day in court and to bring justice to those children. But again, because I'm not there, I haven't had the opportunity to review those cases, but I can commit to them that I'm gonna try and seek justice for all involved.
This is going to be a really hard case to prosecute simply because of the time factor that has gone on. There's a loss of physical evidence. We know that the Bexar County Hospital District back in the 80s, when this came to light, early 80s, they purged and shredded a lot of the documentation that surrounded Jeanine Jones at the time. We don't know if they can even prove that there was actually a murder that took place.
Right. And those are some of the issues that we're going to have to deal with is time and the delay in waiting so long to prosecute these cases. But again, we're going to give it all the attention that it deserves.
But you can hear from Howard the emotional desire to have this pursued. There's lots of families that don't have answers about what happened to their infants at the hospital at that time. And so there's definitely a need for a thorough review and an examination of what happened during that time.
I absolutely agree. And my heart goes out to those families of those infants. And again, that's why we're committed to doing everything to bring them justice.
Do you think District Attorney Nicola Hood overpromised? He told people that he was going to get a conviction, and that he made it sound like it was a fait accompli.
Well, I don't want to second guess his motives. I don't want to second guess why he said what he did. But all I know is it's something that we have to deal with now coming into the DA's office. So we will look at those cases and do everything possible.
It's possible that Jeanine Jones could walk out free?
Well, I suppose anything's possible, but we're gonna look carefully at those cases, and there are other elements, not only the delay in time, but it doesn't make sense to go to trial to seek, for example, a life sentence for someone that's already at the end of her life. So if there's a way to be reasonable in resolving these cases, then we want to look at that too. But I want to underscore that we're going to have the families involved in whatever resolution we think is appropriate in these cases.
So you will keep the lines of communication open to the families that fear they may have lost children to Jeanine Jones?
Absolutely. And I want to let them know that there's not going to be a delay from the time that the original prosecutor that was handling the case to the new prosecutor that will be taking over, because it's someone that is going to be very competent and will hit the ground running.
So you're going to change out who the person that was handling the case?
Yes, that individual has already resigned, so he will not be handling those cases as far as I'm concerned.
So Howard, the caller, made it sound like that nothing's been happening on this case since the primary. Is that your understanding?
Well, it may. I'm not privy to the progress that's been made on these cases, so I can't speak to that.
Okay, another caller. Let's go to John. And the number to call in is 210-614-8980 as we talk with District Attorney-elect Joe Gonzalez. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Another wonderful program. And I just wanted to say how refreshing it is to hear the views of the new DA. How about his open-mindedness, his realistic views, compassionate views for the challenges that we face as a society. I believe that, you know, we really need to change the way we've been approaching some of the maladies, like or not just like the issues of, like drugs, for example. People do drugs as a part of society, whether it's alcohol, nicotine, or, you know, tobacco, marijuana, whatever. And we need to intelligently look at that and not punish people for criminal behavior, but it's a societal thing. And I think that just hearing his viewpoint, it makes me feel really excited that he's coming to power. And I think he'll have a lot of folks supporting him. And I just wish him the very best as he moves forward with the challenges that we face. And just thrilled to have him as the new DA.
All right, John, thank you for the call. But Joe Gonzalez, the law is the law. If you have drugs on you, if it's hard drugs, crack or heroin, that's a big offense.
Right. And we're going to have to take it on a case by case basis. So certainly the individual that has a large amount of drugs in his possession, we want to look at that individual and ask ourselves, is he dealing drugs? Is he harming our children? Is he harming our community? That's a different individual for someone that may have a small amount of drugs that may be using it for recreational use. So we have to make those decisions in the DA's office and decide how to prosecute. What we're talking about when we talk about restorative justice and reforming the way we prosecute drug offenses is look to see if there is a component of drug addiction or some other reason that they're committing this crime, like mental health. And again, if we're talking about nonviolent offenders, especially first-time offenders, then there may be a way to deal with that. But certainly the individual that has a history of going to prison because he's out there selling drugs to make money, that's not your ideal candidate for reform.
It seems like you're trying to strike a delicate balance, and it's not an easy one to achieve, of trying to still take care of public safety. That's your primary focus in your job, but also be aware of how people who are the low income, people who are addicted, we have young women who are being trafficked in our community, how to, they may find themselves breaking the law, but in a way they're also victims.
It is absolutely a difficult task to strike a balance. And the reality is that there's only so many beds in prison. There's so many beds here at the county level. And so decisions have to be made how to deal with those individuals and how to prosecute different levels of, for example, drug possession. And so, yes, that's a big challenge for myself and my staff to make those decisions. And we're not going to make everybody happy, but we're obviously working with the concern of trying to do what's in the best interest of the county.
210-614-8980. Back to the phones with Tony. And Tony, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with incoming District Attorney Joe Gonzalez.
Hello, it's good to talk to you. On Sunday night at the 6 o'clock news, they were talking about CBD oil. For people who were in pain or suffered from different things that happened to them. And I want to know what his opinion is on CBD oil and also medical use of marijuana for pain or discomfort or whatever the situation is.
All right, Tony, thank you for the call.
I think that's an area where most people can agree, regardless of the side of the aisle that you're on. It's not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's one of understanding and compassion. And certainly, if somebody's seeking medicinal marijuana or other types of substances that may help them, I know that there have been instances where someone suffers from epilepsy or suffers from some other malady. That's certainly something that we want to take into consideration. So I do think that there is a need to look at medicinal uses for certain types of drugs.
But medical marijuana is illegal in Texas.
Correct.
You don't have medical marijuana cards in Texas. You can whip one out and show them to a law officer, and it'll mean nothing to them. You don't make the laws, Joe Gonzalez. They do that up in Austin with the legislature. So how do you, reconcile the idea that we may have people who are dealing with serious diseases? They may be suffering from cancer, other issues, and they need medical marijuana to just help them get through the day. But the law is the law.
Well, sure, and I can't order. We've talked, for example, about cite and release and whether or not an officer has a discretion to arrest or cite an individual. But if a case is filed with us, we do have the discretion to decide punishment. We do have the discretion to decide whether or not this individual should be incarcerated or should be seeking treatment. We also have the discretion to grant diversionary programs. So that's how we can impact an individual who may be involved in drug use for medical reasons.
Now, the cite and release program that was set up by District Attorney Nicola Hood had very high bars to reach for anyone to take advantage of. And I believe the numbers that I read in Express News is that only 10 people ever were able to be able to use the release part of that law. How are you going to change that?
What I've come to find out is that there was a disconnect between the district attorney's office and law enforcement, between Nico's desire to get this off the ground and law enforcement's ability to make it happen. What I've done is I've actually visited with both Chief McManus and Sheriff Javier Salazar and talked to both of them about getting this program immediately off the ground. We've talked about the types of offenses that would be eligible for that. I've talked to them about the kinds of situations where I would like for them to cite an individual as opposed to arresting them. And I think we're all on the same page. I believe that we all have come to an agreement about the sorts of cases. And I'll tell you right now that what the cases we're looking at is minor amounts of marijuana possession, that is misdemeanor amounts. We're talking about certain theft offenses, driving while license invalid. Those are the type of offenses that we've talked about that would be eligible for the cite and release program.
Now, the issue with discretion when it comes to enforcement of the law, especially with things like marijuana possession and cite and release, it can be troubling if these things are not tracked. And we have to hear stories that if you're black and you're poor in San Antonio and Bexar County, you're going to get the full extent of the law. But if you're well off and you're white, then you're able to get the release part of it. How are you going to track it to make sure that doesn't happen?
Well, that's going to be a real challenge because we want to look at the implementation and make sure it's equitable. You ought not to be treated differently if you're in an affluent part of San Antonio versus a poor side of town. So obviously that's going to be a big concern of mine. But what had been indicated to me by law enforcement is that they felt like they needed to have the discretion to make that call with an individual stop. Let's say the person stopped is unruly, is uncooperative, there's some other aggravating factors. The officers have to have the discretion to make an arrest, and I understand that. But separate from that, what I want to make sure is that we're fair across the county and that people are being treated fairly regardless of how much money they have in their pocket.
So the transparency in the system, will people be able to see how it's working and who gets to take advantage of the outcomes?
We plan to make it as transparent as we can.
And what would be the barriers to that? I mean, would it be like privacy problems, or will you be putting out an annual report? How will that work?
I think we have to work those kinks out, but certainly making a report available is something that we're looking at. We want to track these cases as soon as we can. I mean, there may be some turnover. The biggest concern I have is people's willingness to comply with that. If we cite an individual and tell them to show up, what if they don't show up? Where do we go from there?
And release doesn't mean it's release. You still have to go through a process, and
correct,
you have to be follow up on that.
That's right.
We'll be talking more with Joe Gonzalez, the district attorney-elect, takes office on January 1st. Call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the studio with us today, Joe Gonzalez. He is going to be the new Bexar County District Attorney. He was elected into that office with 58% of the vote, and he will be sworn in just a few minutes after midnight on January 1st, and then he'll have a more public swearing in later that day as well. He's here to take your questions. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. What do you expect of the new district attorney? 210-614-8980. And Daniel is on the line. Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
How you doing? Thanks for having me. Mr. Gonzalez, I had a question for you about how you intend to pursue, I guess you would call it cases or incidents, or cops, specifically San Antonio cops and detectives when they do something wrong. You know, it's been in the news a lot lately that this rash of problems we have with the sheriff's office, those problems aren't unique to them. You know, there are detectives, and specifically within the last year, there was a detective named Cordero that beat his wife, and then he ran away from the scene, and the sheriff had to call him to come back. He refused to come back, and he was never, as far as I know, never indicted. No charges were taken against him. And the worst case about that, the worst thing about that, Mr. Gonzalez, is that that man still has his job. How is it in this day of Me Too, when men are losing their jobs based on allegations alone, a detective who should be held to the utmost highest standards beats his wife and is allowed to keep his job?
All right. So, Daniel, thank you for the call. That brings up a lot of stuff we need to explore when it comes to guarding the guardians of Bexar County. So, first off, if there is an officer-involved shooting in Bexar County, that is very raises a lot of public concern. Like, wow, was this a bad shooting? How is your office going to respond?
Well, I'm planning on putting a committee together that's going to be comprised of my senior staff to review those police-involved shootings. And we're also talking about a potential citizens advisory committee whenever there's an incident involving a police officer so that we can get some input from the citizenry. But I'll tell you that my personal opinion is that a police officer doesn't get a pass, doesn't get a free ride because he happens to carry a gun and a badge. We're going to treat him as any other citizen, and I agree with the caller that officers, peace officers, are held to a higher standard. They should know better. They are guardians of the law, and so we're going to treat them appropriately. We're going to review these cases on an individual basis, and if they committed a crime, we're going to prosecute them.
Well, Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar, I mean, he has a press conference going on at this very minute talking about a Bexar County Sheriff's deputy who is in trouble with the law and how he's going to be dealing with that. He has been very open about some of the issues that he's had with detention officers and deputies who, you know, the number, I was like, what is it, like 15 have been so far for this year? I mean, and that's a guesstimate, but I think it's about right. That's an issue. But then again, police officers, they have CLEAT behind them, which is the combined law enforcement and they provide a lot of legal representation. It's not that easy to try to prosecute these individuals because they have some legal muscle behind them.
Well, and officers, just like anybody else, enjoys a presumption of innocence, and they have a right to rely on good representation. But again, we're going to look to see if they committed a crime, and we think it's appropriate, we're going to prosecute them. And I'll tell you that my opinion, hearing and seeing what is happening in the Sheriff's Department, I think that's a credit to Sheriff Salazar that he has a desire to weed out those individuals because nobody wants bad apples in their administration. And I certainly commend him for that.
Okay, another caller, and the number is 210-614-8980 if you want to have a question with District Attorney-elect Joe Gonzalez. And Bob, hi, Bob. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I hope everybody's having a good day. This is actually not a policy question. It's more of a curiosity question. Why does someone want to be a district attorney?
That's a good question, Bob. Thank you for that. So what are your motivations?
Yeah, that is a very good question. Thank you for that. People ask me that all the time. Yeah, I've been a lawyer now for 30 years. I began my career as a prosecutor, and I got a sense of satisfaction from helping those that were victims of crime. I have spent the last 22 years as a criminal defense lawyer because I learned over the years that not everything is black and white. There is a lot of gray. Not everybody needs to go to prison. I have come back to the district attorney's office because it was the right thing to do. I felt a calling, and this is my way of giving back to the community. I've been blessed with a good career. I've been blessed with success as a defense lawyer, and now is my time to give back to this community. I believe I've got some something to offer to the citizens of Bexar County. And I ran on, again, the platform of reform, a platform of improving the way the district attorney's office is run. I've been elected to office, and I'm committing to doing just that.
Well, if you believe the local papers, and I do, there was a calling for you to become the district attorney, apparently, when you got into a kerfuffle with the current district attorney, Nicola Hood, and he threatened to shut down your legal practices.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, the paper had been following that story when it began last year, and that certainly had something to do with my decision to run. But I think that was more about the lack of leadership and my decision that there had to be somebody that was willing to take the reins and to do the right thing and to show people what the right thing was. And so that certainly was a motivator, but that wasn't the only reason that I ran.
Well, in the campaign that you had during the primary, you said you wanted to restore integrity to the office of district attorney. What did that mean?
Well, I was talking about several issues. One of those is that there appears to be an epidemic in the amount of incidences involving prosecutors that were committing what were called Brady violations, where they were failing to disclose some evidence until right before trial, in some cases in trial. And so I believe that part of the reason was the culture in the office, that it came from the very top. And so that's part of my motivation to run is I want to educate and I want to train my prosecutors that you have to do the right thing, that you shouldn't hide the ball. You know, we say all the time in this business, it is what it is, and you lay out the evidence and you let the jury do their job. So that's part of what I was talking about. Obviously, the other issue was with regard to my decision to run against the elected the current DA, Nicola Hood. I felt like there was some issue with regard to the decisions that he made in that particular case. And so those are the two issues that I was talking about when I talked about a lack of integrity in the office.
So as the district attorney, you are the top lawyer for the county, and you are a law enforcement officer. You enforce the law in the courtroom, you know, like we see on TV, Law and Order, you know, they catch the bad guys and then it's up to you to put them in jail and keep them there. Being this top individual, you set a tone and an example and a temperament that you think will flow through the entire law enforcement system locally?
That's correct. One of the things that I've learned over the years is people have to feel like they're respected in the system. And I've seen time and time again where prosecutors do not treat victims of crime with respect. They don't certainly don't treat those accused of a crime with respect, and even witnesses that are involved. I want to teach my prosecutors and insist that they treat everyone with a high level of respect, all the parties, from the lawyers to the officers to the victims to the witnesses, because I think that just engenders a culture of respect for the law. And so that's one of the things that I want to do to change the culture in that office.
You know, you were a successful defense attorney, had a great practice. You've been around for a while. You grew up tough in San Antonio. It was you pulled yourself up out of a working class neighborhood, became a top attorney. You could spend this time just getting a boat, you know. why become DA?
I tell you what, a lot of people have told me that, and certainly, you know, my wife and daughter, I turned their lives around. And when I made this decision, I made it together with them. We talked about it. We prayed about it. But I just told them that I felt like this was the right thing to do. I'd been teaching our daughter growing up. I remember this phrase from my mother, you do the right thing even when no one is looking. And so I made the decision to run because I wanted to change the culture in the office. And sure, this has caused our life to change. And I jokingly say, so we're going to eat more hamburger than steak, but it's worth it. It's worth because we have to look at the big picture, which is trying to keep this community safe for our children.
You also become a public figure. That means you're going to be undergoing a lot of scrutiny. We've seen what that revealed when the district attorney, Nicola Hood, became the DA, and a lot of people didn't like what they saw, and then he blamed the press for trying to get him. Are you prepared for the glaring light of public scrutiny?
I am, and I know that the press has an important job to do. And you don't just invite the press when they have nice things to say. I don't intend to shut the press out. And I don't expect that I'm going to read the Sunday paper every time and they're going to be writing positive stories about me, or that the media is going to be reporting positive stories.
They're going to, it's just, you're a public official.
Sure.
You're in charge of a critical office, and we have some crackerjack reporters out there who are going to be looking for you to slip and fall.
I understand, but I also understand that's an important part of the system, and I'm going to make my office transparent, and I'm not going to run away from those types of reporters when they want to talk to me.
All right, and you'll invite all the media to your press conferences, not just a few?
You bet.
Okay, all right, we're going to take another break. Got some callers on the board. We will get you on the air right after this. If you got a call for a question for District Attorney-elect Joe Gonzalez, the number is 210-614-8980. You know, we got that on tape. We're going to be keeping that on tape, and we'll be playing that if it's ever there's a problem. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. District Attorney-elect Joe Gonzalez is in the studio. He's taking your questions and calls, 210-614-8980. Jan is on the line. Jan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. It's a pleasure. My question for the District Attorney-elect has to do with the death penalty. I know at one point when he was on the campaign trail, he did come out and state that he would not be seeking the death penalty. I wondered what his position might be at this point.
Jan, thank you for that call. And so capital punishment, it is something that Texans apparently support when the evidence is overwhelmingly there.
There's been a lot of controversy about my position with regard to the death penalty, and it started with a rapid-fire debate where they asked me to respond with a yes or no about whether or not I was in favor or against the death penalty. I responded that I thought that when it was based on the question that when it was racially motivated that I would not be in favor of it because I don't think it should be based on race. But what I've done since then, there was in fact, I think it was here that I tried to clarify that about 2 weeks later. My position is that I believe the death penalty is a tool of last resort. That because now in Texas we have life without parole, if the purpose in punishing someone for that kind of an offense is to keep our community safe, and that person that is convicted ends up dying in prison, then we've done just that without the need to execute that individual. I have some concerns about the implementation of the death penalty and historically how it has been administered. Instances where the state has gotten it wrong, and you can't bring that individual back. However, having said all that, I do insist on my right to use the death penalty in the appropriate instance. If there is a situation where I believe it's appropriate, then I'm not going to be afraid to seek it. But I do think that because of the situation that we now find ourselves in Texas with the life without parole, I think that in the majority of the cases that may be the appropriate resolution.
Now, there's not a whole lot of transparency with how the Texas prison system does the death penalty. We're finding out a little bit now about the pentobarbital drug, how it was they're using a special pharmacy to make it. It's at a strip mall in Houston. It's problematic. Been a lot of reports of the inmates having a lot of pain when they're being executed. There's a lot of questions. So how much transparency do you get as a district attorney? Do you get more information about how these things are proceeding? Is that a concern for you about the pain and suffering that an inmate would suffer during the execution?
Well, that goes under the category of whether or not it's cruel and unusual punishment. Obviously, if it's administered in such a way that it becomes a painful administration, then that's something that's appropriate to consider for those that are administering that. But from our end, remember, what we're doing is making the decision at the beginning whether or not to seek death, and our presumption is that it's going to be carried in a humane manner. I don't know that plays into the calculus for me. There are other concerns that are more important. One of those is what I just mentioned about the erroneous nature of and the finality of capital punishment. The other one is the cost involved. You know, there have been studies after studies that show that it's more expensive to put someone to death versus keeping them on a life sentence path. And so those are other considerations, I think, that are just as important.
Now, we only have 11 lawyers in Bexar County who are certified in order to be a defense attorney during a capital punishment trial. We have some capital punishment trials that are waiting for attorneys, and this has become a problem.
You would think that this is something that is pervasive in South Texas, but I'll tell you, for example, in Bexar County, my research has shown that in the last 11 years, there were only 7 cases that the district attorney's office sought death, and in those 7 cases, a jury returned a verdict of death only twice. So that tells me that at least Bexar County juries are looking at this very carefully to decide whether or not the death penalty is an appropriate resolution.
All right, here's another caller, and this is Mike. Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm a criminal justice major at UTSA, and we've talked a lot in class about practices like restorative justice. I was kind of wondering what your take on the school-to-prison pipeline kind of thing, and if you would kind of be interested in restorative justice practices.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
Well, not only would I be interested in it, but I've been talking about it in the last year. I do believe in restorative justice, and I do believe that the prison-to-pipeline phenomenon is a reality. We see that especially among minorities. I think that where there's an opportunity to divert someone from the prison system, that we ought to try and do that, and that's certainly something that I'm going to be committed to doing. One of the things I want to make sure that the general public knows is, you know, you're hearing from me, you're saying, well, this is the DA, and he's talking about reform, and he's talking about restorative justice, but what is he going to do to keep me safe? Well, we're just as concerned with fighting violent crime. We're just as concerned with beefing up those kinds of cases where we keep our community safe. But we also want to be smart on crime, and that's what restorative justice is all about, is are there ways to avoid that person from ending up with a conviction so they can, you know, get a good job in the future or join the military, especially when they commit small minor crimes during their youth.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about trying to do something about our public defender's office in Bexar County. What are your plans for that?
Well, this is, in the final analysis, an adversarial system. My job is to prosecute crimes. My job is to protect victims. But I will tell you that I believe that the system has to be fair. And so there are problems with the current administration of justice. One of those things that's wrong with the way it works is sometimes there's no incentive for a court-appointed lawyer to do his job. If he's going to make a flat a fee for representing someone, regardless of whether he takes that case to trial or not, there's not a lot of incentive for him to fight hard for his client. And so I think it ought to be fair. And I'm certainly in favor of whatever makes the playing field level. I'll do my job, let them do theirs, but let's be fair about it.
Now, you also ran on a platform of being an advocate for domestic violence, trying to help people who are victims of domestic violence get protective orders. And how is that working out?
I will tell you right now, we've already made a major change. Under the current administration, the family violence or domestic violence unit was stuck under another larger division or section. We have pulled it back out. We've made it its own division. We hired someone who has prior family violence experience, and she's going to hit the ground running. We're going to look at putting more prosecutors in that unit, hopefully putting more advocates and investigators to make sure that those cases are being prosecuted. Because one of the reasons I decided to run is I discovered that about 60% of the family violence misdemeanor assault cases were being dismissed. I believe that's because of the inadequate preparation and training for those cases. And it's not something that I'm blaming the prosecutors for. It's just a lack of manpower. We want to try and improve on that so that we can continue to provide protection for victims of family violence.
So help me understand how that would work. Walk me through it. So if there is a case where there is a domestic abuser, the police are called, they show up, they see and they are able to help the victim, let's say it's the wife, and they get her out of the household, then they come to you and say, I want a protective order, help me do that, and what's different now?
What's different now is we want to make sure that we focus on getting the protective order that is necessary. We want to ensure that someone's going to be there for her, that we don't let the case fall through the cracks. And one of the things that I want to ensure is that we have victims and lawyers make contact with the victims of family violence as soon as possible to establish a relationship so that she or he can be confident that we're going to do everything we can to prosecute the perpetrators.
So if someone has been through this process before, say under a previous district attorney, and they didn't get the results that they wanted, are you going to tell them it's different now?
Well, I mean, we certainly are going to try and make it better. We're going to try and make it different. Now, whether or not that case can be reviewed, that's going to be on a case by case basis. But certainly, that's as long as it's within the statute of limitations, we certainly have the ability to review those kinds of cases where victims perhaps didn't feel that they received justice.
On January 1st, you become the new district attorney. We're also going to have 15 new judges, a new district clerk, a new county clerk, a lot of new faces at the courthouse. We know that it's a very complicated system that we have at the wheels of justice. A lot of little moving parts. Is it going to be complicated those first couple of months getting things going?
Well, I think it will be because it's new to a lot of the players that are coming back, people that have been defense lawyers for a number of years, including myself. So there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. So what I would ask the community is to be patient, give us a couple of months to start greasing the wheels to make sure everything is running. But we're committed to doing everything we can as soon as we can to keep this community safe and again to implement those programs that I've been talking about.
And so you said that the handoff between Nicola Hood and you has been pretty good. You're getting a lot of cooperation. Calls are being returned. You think that's all the way through the courthouse is happening that way?
I think generally speaking, we're getting some cooperation from his administration. And so I'm thankful to him and his administration for that.
All right. So District Attorney-elect Joe Gonzalez, he's going to be sworn in on January 1st. And we want to thank you for coming in today and all our callers. Sorry we couldn't get you all on the air today. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.